Please turn over to Daniel chapter 6. Daniel chapter 6. We're going to be looking at one of those stories that we've all heard a million times going back to our youth. But you know, I want to make this little brief statement before I get into the lesson. I know I say all of us have heard it, but it's very possible some have not heard this or have heard a distorted view of it or have heard it but don't remember it correctly. And I remember when I was probably around 19 or 20, my friend and I, we were going to a church camp. We were supposed to do a little skit kind of thing. We were doing the story of Daniel in the lion's den. And we were kind of rehearsing it in front of his girlfriend, and we were doing this, and we said, okay, well, Daniel's been in the lion's den, okay, and we move on. And a minute later, when we were talking about Daniel again, we were talking about him as if he was living. And she said, oh, wait, you already threw him in the lion's den. I'm like, yeah, okay. She didn't know that Daniel lived. You know, she had never heard the story of Daniel in the lion's den. So my point is while most of us probably have heard this, most of us probably know the story, we may not have read it recently. You may not be very familiar with it. And anyways, I think it's an interesting story and one definitely worth reading. So tonight I want to read that. And I want to just kind of tell you background, what's happening in the book of Daniel. Remember that the nation of Israel was torn in two because of sin. There was a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom. The northern kingdom of Israel was taken captive and they went into Assyria. The southern kingdom of Judah was taken captive about 150 years later or so by the nation of Babylon and King Nebuchadnezzar and all that. And then King Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian king, he would eventually die. And after he died, the Babylonian nation was then conquered by the Persian nation. So when we're reading in Daniel chapter 6, it's a Persian king. The reading that Corbin just did for us in Daniel chapter 3 was a Babylonian king. So between chapter 3 and chapter 6, there's been a change of rulers. So anyways, Daniel chapter 6, let's begin in verse 1. It says, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be throughout the whole kingdom, and over them three presidents, of whom Daniel was one, to whom these satraps should give account, so that the king might suffer no loss. Then this Daniel became distinguished above all the other presidents and satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Now remember here who Daniel is. He's a Jew who was first taken captive by the Babylonians, then still held in captive by the Persians. He was not a Persian. He was not a Babylonian. He was a Jew from a foreign land. But you notice here in this first three verses that Daniel was very impressive. King Darius had made him one of only three people in the land that was underneath him. And out of those three people underneath King Darius, he was the best one. It says in verse 3, then this Daniel became distinguished above all others. Above all the other presidents. You know, I want to make this point as we begin this lesson. Good work is rewarded by God. It's not always earthly, but frequently, if you are a good employee, you will be rewarded even on this earth. In the book of Proverbs 22, verse 29, Solomon said this, do you see a man skillful in his work? He will stand before kings. Solomon was a king, and Solomon was telling the people, if there's a man skillful in his work, he will stand before somebody of great importance. He will stand before kings. The first point we need to see here is that Daniel worked in such a way that the king noticed him. He lived and worked in such a way that he was different than everybody else. He was a living example to King Darius and the other people that were around him. In the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 10, and also in the book of Colossians chapter 3, we see the Apostle Paul encouraging Christians how to work. He says in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 31, so whether you eat or drink, or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Then Colossians 3, 17, he says, and whatever you do in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. So the Apostle Paul was telling the Christians in the first century, whatever you do, if you're living it, if you're talking it, whether you're eating something, whether you're drinking something, everything you do as a Christian, you do it to glorify God. You do it wholeheartedly. This is how you honor Him. This is how you give Him praise. This is how you show glory to Him. And this is how we as Christians distinguish ourselves from the rest of the world. At least one way is by giving 100% at work. Not lying on our timesheets, being honest in everything we do. And this is how we honor God. This reminds me of a story that I read once. Don't know if it's a true story or not. But there was in Europe somewhere, story is told that there was this group of musicians, traveling musicians. And as they traveled through Europe, times were hard and there was getting in such a way that there was hardly anybody turning out to their concerts, to their performances. And it was getting really small, and they were beginning to get depressed. They were beginning to wonder, why are we even doing this? And one night, a storm hit, and it was extremely snowy, and they looked out into the audience, and there was almost no one out there. So they began to talk about amongst themselves, should we even go out tonight? Is it even worth it? Why are we doing this? There's no one here. But then the leader of their group stood up, and he made this comment. He said, I know you are discouraged. I am too. But we have a responsibility to those who might come. We will go on and we will do the best job of which we are capable. It is not the fault of those who come that others do not. They should not be punished with less than our best. So when they heard this from their leader, they were picked up. They were encouraged by it. And they went out and did a fantastic performance. Now as they were leaving the stage, a man came to their leader and he handed him a note. And the leader called everybody together because he wanted to read the note to them. So slowly the man opened the note and it said, thank you for a beautiful performance. And it was signed simply, your king. They did not know who was in the audience that night. But because they gave their best, they were standing before a king. So that's the number one that I want to leave you guys with this evening. Is everything you do, everything we do is performed in front of the king. In fact, the King of Kings. So a question we need to ask ourselves, are the words and the deeds that we are giving out there, that we are putting out there, are they something worthy of His audience? Are they worthy of the audience of the King of Kings? Not just an earthly king, we stand before the King of Kings. How you live your life, is it worthy of God? Is it worthy of Christ? Let's pick up in verse 4. Then the presidents and the satraps sought to find a ground for complaint against Daniel with regard to the kingdom. But they could find no ground for complaint or any fault because he was faithful and no error or fault was found in him. We're going to notice as we go through Daniel chapter 6, there's going to be a lot of descriptions describing the character of evil people, of wicked people, of people with bad intentions. And I want to make this point also. You know, persecutions come. And persecutions always come from people. You may have hardships. They may not come from people. They may come from because there's a natural disaster. But persecutions you endure will always come from people. Always. And so Daniel here is an innocent man, and they are seeking to find a reason to complain against him. So the first characteristic of a wicked person that I want you to notice here tonight is that they seek to find reasons to complain. They look for them. And this is not how Christians are supposed to be. The Apostle Paul said that Christians are not to be grumblers. We're not to be fault finders. We're not to be looking around, looking to blame someone for something or to put someone down. That's not how a Christian is supposed to live their life. But it is characteristic of the world, and that's not supposed to be characteristic of us. So verse 5 here. Then these men said, we shall not find any ground for complaint against this Daniel, unless we find it in connection with the law of his God. That's an awesome statement. You remember what they were saying about Christ when he stood before Pilate, when he was standing before the Jewish council, and they were trying to find people that would agree, trying to find somebody who had some accusations against Christ, trying to find something valid, and it says they could find nothing. Daniel is also a very blameless man. He lived his life in such a way that there were no, listen to this, very carefully, there were no legitimate complaints against Daniel. There were no legitimate complaints against Jesus Christ. I once heard from a person that an elder should not be an elder if someone had a complaint against them. Well, then, if you take that and apply it to the church today, Jesus Christ would never have been an elder in the church. The question is, are the complaints legitimate? Daniel, Jesus Christ, there were no legitimate complaints they could find against these gentlemen, against Jesus Christ, against Daniel. These men said, we shall not find any ground for complaint against this Daniel. They recognized Daniel as a blameless man, as a holy man, and they even reasoned, we can't find anything to blame this guy unless we can somehow twist or capture him in the Word of God. And again, this does not mean that we will not be illegitimate issues, but these are legitimate issues they were looking for in Daniel. And Daniel lived life in such a way that there was nothing blameless for him. They could find no dirt on him. Let's pick up in verse 6. Then these presidents and satraps came by agreement to the king, and said to him, O King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the king, the prefects and the satraps, the counselors and the governors are agreed that the king should establish an ordinance and enforce an injunction that whoever makes petition to any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be revoked. Therefore, King Darius signed the document and injunction. Two other characteristics you're going to know about wicked people or evil people. First of all, they will lie to damage a righteous man. They will lie to damage a righteous man. They came in verse 6 and they said in verse 7, this is what they're telling Darius, all the presidents are agreed. Did you catch that in verse 7? All the presidents of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the counselors and the governors, are agreed. Is this a true statement? Had Daniel agreed to this? But they're coming to King Darius and they're telling him, everyone's in agreement, King, that we need to do this. And they lied to damage a righteous man. And that course, that continued even until Jesus Christ. They lied to damage Christ. They lied to damage his kingdom. They accused him of casting out demons by Beelzebub. And even today, lies can damage the church. Another thing you see about wicked people in this passage is that they pretend to respect someone in order to gain a friend. They came to King Darius. They acted like they were trying to honor him. O King, live forever. Let us honor you. Let us pray to no one but you for the next 30 days. Let's honor you this way, King Darius. But is that really what they were trying to do? Were they really trying to honor King Darius? No, they were really trying to capture and seize and to kill a righteous man. But wicked people will feign respect to gain a friend. Let's pick one other comment. Verse 7, it says, and whoever makes a petition to any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. So they agreed, they talked to King Darius, they said, let's make this law that no one can pray to anyone but you for 30 days. That's a long time. Can you imagine if someone came on the scene and they said, we're not going to pray to God, we're going to forbid prayer for a month. Can you imagine? What would it take for you to not pray to God for 30 days? Well, Daniel knew he was risking his own life and he wasn't willing to do that. But what would it take you to tell yourself, I'm not praying to God anymore? Maybe it would take being heartbroken. Maybe it would take losing your job. Maybe it would take financial difficulties. But how many people, because they get angry towards God or too busy or forget Him, they stop praying to God? And they're not doing this because they've been threatened. They're simply doing it frequently for reasons a lot less significant. Let's not become a people that don't pray. Another thing I want you to notice from this passage, I want you to notice the king's failure in what he did. They come in, they tell the king these things, we're all in agreement. This is how we are, King Darius, we've all talked about it. And what does King Darius do? He signs the document and the injunction. He wasn't cautious in making this agreement. He wasn't cautious in making this law. He did not investigate it to see if these things were true. He did nothing. He was hasty in making his decision. This is a reminder to us as Christians, to us as people in general, that when we have a serious decision in front of us, we need to take our time. We need to investigate it. And this is exactly what King Darius did not do. He was hasty in his agreement. Let's pick up in verse 10. When Daniel knew that the document had been signed, notice this, how it begins. When Daniel knew, when he knew this had been signed, when he knew his life was in jeopardy, what does he do? He went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber open toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he had done previously. Then these men came by agreement. Now notice that phrase, came by agreement. Now, if you look back at verse 6 and see what it says there, it says, then these presidents and satraps came by agreement. And now they're coming to Daniel by agreement. You see, they have made a plan. They've devised a plan to come by agreement, to try trapping somebody, to go to the king and lie to him with a plan, with an agreement. Notice just how that is describing these wicked people. Then these men, verse 11, came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and plea before his God. Then they came near and said before the king concerning the injunction, O king, did you not sign an injunction that anyone who makes petition to any god or man within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, the thing stands fast, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be revoked. Then they answered and said before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, look at how they make it sound to King Darius. He pays no attention to you, O king, or the injunction you have signed, but makes petition 3 times a day. I want to first talk about Daniel's commitment here. I want you to notice a couple things, 4 things about his commitment. First of all, Daniel knew that there is a time in his life you have to draw a line in the sand. There comes a time where you have to say, this is what's right and I'm not going to back down from it. This is wrong and I'm not going to let anyone come over here. There's a time in our lives, there's a time as Christians where we have to draw a line in the sand and say, I'm not going any further. Daniel knew it was going to cost him his life, and he wasn't willing to go worship in a corner. He wasn't willing to just say silent prayers, you know, at nighttime when no one was watching. Daniel was unwilling to do this. And what's most amazing about it is those men knew he would not be willing to do this. They knew he would not back down. They knew he was going to get on his knees and pray like he had been doing every other day. 3 times a day. They knew it. How do they know that? Because he lived his life in such a way that everyone knew he was going to pray. He lived his life in such a way that everyone knew he was going to give honor to God. Everyone knew it. So the first thing I want you to know about Daniel's commitment is he knew when to draw a line in the sand. My wife and I were talking about this recently. It's like in personal evangelism, and when you're trying to talk to somebody, we get uncomfortable. And it's like we're trying to talk to them about Jesus Christ or coming to church. And it's like we want to apologize to them because we're trying to share the gospel. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to bother you. And we have this mentality, I think it's because of fear of rejection, I don't know. We have this mentality, we're almost going to apologize for doing what we know we should be doing. But Daniel said, I'm not going to apologize, here's the line, I'm not backing down. So learn as Christians when to draw the line. Second thing I want you to notice about his commitment is he did what was right, even if it put him in harm's way. We as Christians need to do what is right, even if it costs us money, even if it costs us our job, even if it costs us a relationship, we need to do what's right, no matter what the costs. The third thing about Daniel's commitment you're going to notice is he had a commitment towards prayer. 1 Thessalonians 5:17, Paul made this really short statement. We all know it by heart, right? Pray without ceasing. Pray without ceasing. I was thinking about this, and which one came first, the chicken or the egg kind of thing? And this is my opinion on this, maybe you disagree. I think Daniel was a good man because he prayed. I don't think he prayed because he was a good man. I think he was a good man because he prayed. You want to live a life righteous to God, right? You want to live a life of service to God. You cannot, as a Christian, trying to live a righteous life, you cannot do this without a prayer life. You cannot do it. If you are not communicating with God on a regular basis, you cannot have a proper relationship with God. You cannot. And Daniel understood this. And this is why he was a good man. Because he prayed to God. He was committed to God. We need to have this kind of commitment as well. I was reading one of the commentaries. And they were talking about how our houses, the church we are a part of, these need to be places of prayer. You know, we need to pray where we live. We need to pray when we're going to bed, when we're waking up, when we're driving to work, when we're eating our food. We need to pray when we're having a hard day, when we're having a good day. All those things, right? We need to pray all the time. And Matthew Henry made this comment, which I thought was really interesting. Real short, Matthew Henry said this, where we have a tent, God must have an altar. Where we have a tent, God must have an altar. Where you live, that should be where you're praying. Where you worship, you should pray. Where you drive in your car, you should pray. These people, they knew that no matter what, Daniel was going to pray. The fourth thing I want you to notice about Daniel's commitment is in verse 10. It says, he got down on his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God. He gave thanks even in tough times. Don talked about giving thanks this morning, and he was talking about giving thanks for the blessings you have. And we need to. But we also need to give thanks even in hard times. And Daniel was so committed to God that no matter what was going on in his life, He gave thanks to God. I think that's a lesson for all of us. How many of us give thanks to God when our day is in the pits, when our life is in the pits, when things seem to be going the wrong direction every day? How many of us thank God? God, thank you so much. But you know, I believe very strongly that if we pray to God in days like that, it actually helps to turn our day around. I think it actually helps to turn our life around. I've actually read a couple of small articles dealing with the benefits of having a thankful attitude. And you may say, but Nathan, I didn't feel thankful. According to this research, they were saying that even if you don't feel thankful, say thank you. Give thanks. And you'll be surprised at how that impacts you, even when you're not feeling it. So Daniel was committed and he gave thanks, even in tough times. So more about the evil men here. I want you to notice how they plan evil plans. Notice verse 11. I already made this comment, but it says in verse 11, these men came by agreement. Evil people plan to do evil things. They lie in wait for opportunity to do harm. They make plans to do bad things. They make plans to do evil things. They make plans to do hurtful things and damaging things to righteous people, to the church, to whatever. They make plans to do this. You'll also notice here again in verse 13, evil people will twist the truth to gain their advantage. They told the king in verse 13, as I made note of this a moment ago, Daniel pays no attention to you. Was it true that Daniel paid no attention to King Darius? We're going to see in a moment it was a lie. He paid attention to King Darius. Let's pick up in verse 14. Then the king, when he heard these words, when he heard how Daniel was praying, when he heard how Daniel had broken this law, when he heard this, he was much distressed and set his mind to deliver Daniel, and he labored till the sun went down to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, "Know, O king, that is the law of the Medes and the Persians, that no injunction or ordinance that the king establishes can be changed." Darius didn't want to kill Daniel. Darius did not want to toss him in the lion's den. And he looked for a way to get him out of it. This kind of reminds me of another story from Christ's trial. Reminds me of Pilate and how he wanted to let Jesus Christ go. His wife came to him and said, "Have nothing to do with this righteous man." And Pilate was looking to let Jesus Christ go. But because Pilate was too weak, he ends up crucifying Jesus Christ. Because Darius was too in love with his own power, in love with the law of the Medes and the Persians, whatever the case, Darius knew what was right here, but he's not going to do what's right. It says, again, in verse 15, it says that that the law of the Medes and the Persians, that there is no injunction that the king establishes that can be changed. Because the king's decision was hasty and not investigated, now he is full of distress. Now he is laboring till the sun goes down to try to find a way out of it. Let's pick up in verse 16. Verse 16. Then the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you." And a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den. And the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of the Lord, his lords, that nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, and sleep fled from him. So King Darius now has a very long night. He wants Daniel to be released, and he tells Daniel, "I hope God can deliver you. You serve him continually. I hope he can deliver you." And so they throw him into the lion's den, and they put a stone over the opening so that Daniel didn't try to escape, so that he was trapped in there with these lions. And it says that King Darius stayed up all night fasting. Sleep fled from him. And I wonder what was causing this. Was it worry for Daniel? Was it guilt? Was it because he loved Daniel? We don't really have a complete picture. Maybe it's a combination of all those things. But King Darius sat up all night. This worldly king, he's not a Jew, he is a worldly king, sat up all night and worried about this Jew he had just thrown into the lion's den. Let's pick up in verse 19. Then at break of day, the king arose and went in haste to the den of lions. As he came near to the den where Daniel was, he cried out in a tone of anguish. The king declared to Daniel, "O Daniel, servant of the living God, Has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? Then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth, and they have not harmed me because I was found blameless before him and also before you. Notice that Daniel says, I was blameless before you also, Darius. I had done nothing wrong to you. Remember a moment ago, I made that comment? Well, here we see Daniel is saying, I did nothing wrong, Darius. There was no reason for you to do this to me. Then he said, I have done nothing wrong also before you, O king. I have done no harm. Verse 23. Then the king was exceedingly glad and commanded that Daniel be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no kind of harm was found on him because he had trusted in his God. And the king commanded, and those men who had maliciously accused Daniel were brought and cast into the den of lions, they, their children, and their wives. And before they reached the bottom of the den, the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces. It says, early in the morning, Darius goes to the tomb. Does that sound reminiscent also of a gospel story? Mary Magdalene goes to the tomb early in the morning to see Jesus Christ because he also was put in the den. He also was put in the tomb. He also was put in there to battle the lion. Satan is called a lion, right? So Christ went into this tomb. He was dead. Daniel went into the tomb. He was as good as dead. And Darius goes early in the morning to the tomb, and he cries out in a tone of anguish, it says. And he asks the question, has your God been able to deliver you from the lions? This was the cry of the king of one of the greatest nations on earth at the time, probably the greatest nation on earth at the time. And he is saying, is God able to help the faithful from their hardships, from their times of torment? That's the question Darius was yelling to Daniel. Sometimes I think we need to be reminded that Daniel answered back. Let's look at what Daniel says one more time. Look at what he says. He says in verse 22, verse 22. He said, my God sent his mouth and shut the lion's, sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth, and they have not harmed me. They have not harmed me. King Darius comes to the tomb early in the morning. He's been up all night, not eating. He's sleep deprived. He's so worried about Daniel. He rushes there early in the morning. He yells and he cries out, has your God been able to deliver you? And he hears a voice come back. And the voice says, they have not harmed me. And it wasn't because Daniel was able to scamper up the side of the rock and to get out of their way. He says, they have not harmed me because God has sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth. Daniel was spared because God shut the mouths of the lions. God was in control of the situation. Daniel was spared because God sent protection. Even though the angel did it, even though the angel shut the mouth, it was God's delivery. He was the source of this delivery. It may have came from the angel, but it was his delivery. You know, we may find deliverance at times from somebody else, from a friend, from a family member, from folks from church. We may find delivery. But any time, ultimately, God's people are delivered, it's from the hand of God. It's from the hand of God. And it says Daniel was delivered also because he, verse 22, because I was found blameless before God, before him, and also before you, O king. And also verse 23, Daniel was delivered because he trusted. He said, no kind of harm was found on him because he had trusted in his God. So we see that Daniel has been delivered from the lion's den. But Daniel's delivery is not complete yet, is it? He still had these men who are constantly accusing him, who are constantly looking for reason to put him down. Do you think that it's going to stop now? God's deliverance was not yet done. Notice verse 24. And the king commanded, and those men who had maliciously, look at their intent, maliciously accused Daniel, they were brought and cast into the den of lions. So we see now that God has delivered him from the lion's den and also from those who were maliciously accusing him. So God delivered him. Verse 25. Then King Darius wrote to all the peoples, nations and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in all my royal dominion, people are to tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. Now watch what Darius says about God. He's not a religious guy in the sense that he worships Jehovah, but watch what he says about God. For he is the living God, enduring forever. His kingdom shall never be destroyed, and his dominion shall be to the end. He delivers and rescues. He works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. He who has saved Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. King Darius writes a proclamation to the vast majority of the known world at that time. And in this proclamation, he is praising God. Why is he praising God? Because he saw the life of one man named Daniel, and he knew that Daniel worshipped God, and he saw the deliverance and the power of God. It was because of Daniel's example that this worldly king writes a proclamation to all the world. You ever wonder why you're in a hardship, why you're having persecutions, why you're going through struggles? Maybe God is allowing you to go through persecutions and struggles and hardships, because when you come through that and you have held yourself like Daniel has, people are going to look at you and they're going to say, wow, that's the God I want to be a part of. That's the life I want to have a part of. Daniel lived in such a way that when he came out of that lion's den, the king wrote this proclamation. Do you think that Daniel was allowed to be thrown in that lion's den by God? Yeah. Because God had a plan. Through the life of Daniel, God has shared more about him to all the nations, all the peoples, all the languages that dwell in all the earth. Because of Daniel. Because this old man who would not do what was wrong. I want to leave with you some take-home points. I'm going to go through rather quickly. We've covered pretty much all of them. But I want to just hit them one more time. Take-home points then is this. First one is work hard in your life to succeed. Do your best in all you do. And again, it was because of Daniel's example in his life that this proclamation was made. It was because he lived his life in such a way that he was above reproach. He was a blameless man, a hard worker, an honest man, that the whole world was touched because of Daniel. Learn from Daniel's commitment. Sometimes we need to stand up and draw a line. We need to go no further. We can't back down. We can't compromise. Sometimes that's a hard thing for us. Sometimes we want to compromise. Sometimes it's somebody that we love on the other side of that line. Sometimes we have to say, even though I love you, I can't compromise. Sometimes, notice also from Daniel, that we need to knowingly do what is right, even if it puts us in harm's way. We need to pray. We need to pray all the time. We need to have a thankful attitude all the time. We need to give thanks for the tough times. It was because of Daniel's tough time that the world was touched. We have a couple of points, lessons in persecution I want to go through rather quickly. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 12, Paul made this comment. Indeed, all who desire to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. Everyone who wants to live a godly life in Christ will be persecuted. Paul says every single one, all of them. So the first thing we need to recognize is that persecutions are going to come to those who love God. Second thing we need to recognize about persecutions is sometimes when you have a persecution in your life, you can evaluate it, you can study it, you can investigate it all you want, and when you come and you look at the answers, you have no answer. You have nowhere to turn, you don't know what to do, regardless of the investigation you put in. And so then you have to realize, there's no earthly answer here. I can't get myself out of this. And that's when we need to realize that there is maybe not be an earthly solution, but there's a godly solution. There's a spiritual solution. I had Corbin read Daniel chapter 3, verse 16 through 18 at the beginning, because it's an awesome statement of faith and persecution, and that this was an example that there were no earthly solutions. I'm going to read it to you one more time in Daniel chapter 3, beginning in verse 16. It says, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, they were threatened to be thrown into the fire, right? If this be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us. He is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. They were confident of God and his power, and they were confident of their delivery. But then they make this comment, and this isn't faith wavering, by the way. This isn't what James was talking about when he said, don't have your faith being wavering. That's not this. Their faith was 100%, but they weren't sure how God was going to use their faith just yet. So he says in verse 17, we're not going to do this. God is going to deliver us out of your hand. But verse 18, but if not, King Nebuchadnezzar, be it known to you that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. There was no earthly solution to their problem. They had no way of getting out of this. So what do? They look to God. They look to Jesus Christ. Well, they look to God the Father in that situation. And we need to look to Jesus Christ in our times of persecution. When we have no answer, we need to look to God. The final and really the ultimate lesson, I think, of Daniel chapter 6 is this, that our God is a God of deliverance. I think this is the ultimate lesson in this story. We have a God who delivers. We have a God who protects. We have a God who watches over us. We have a God who does not abandon us. He took Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego from a furnace that was so hot, when the men threw them in, they died. And when they took him out of the furnace, they started looking at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and it says they didn't even smell like smoke. We have a God who led 2 or 3 million people across a river that was now dried up as the Egyptian army were bearing down on them. He delivered them from that. We have a God who delivered a man whose body was rotten, whose body was in the grave, whose body was stinking and rotting and decaying. We have a God who says, Lazarus, come forth. You see, we worship a God who delivers. And that's the ultimate lesson we need to remember. Because we're in a world that sometimes we can't see the deliverance. We don't know when it's going to come. The government seems to be going wrong. The things seem to be going wrong. We get all upset. We get all frustrated. We get all depressed. We need to remember we have a God that delivers. Amen. If you're here this evening and you've been struggling in sin, or perhaps your faith in God's deliverance has been shaken by something, we want to help you with that. Or maybe you have not been baptized into Christ. We could help you with that as well. Anything at all, we invite you to come as we sing a song that's been selected.